This Focus with Paul W. Smith podcast is sponsored by Victor's Home Solutions. Visit victors.com, experts in home solutions.
Well, it's another beautiful day this Tuesday, April 16th. It is a pleasure being with you this afternoon, every Monday through Friday from noon to 2. If you can't be here because it's an awkward time for you, you can always check in with us. When you stream us, by the way, at WJR.com or in the WJR app or however you do it, you won't miss a thing. But you can get our podcasts also at WJR.com and on the WJR app. And that way you can listen. The first podcast they list is the entire show. And then they list the individual interviews. I shouldn't say they. I think it's Mike Parsons who does this. Mike, are you the guy who puts that all in there?
Yeah, it's me and a few other hamsters running on the wheel.
Well, you do a very good job, and you do an explanation of what we talked about and all of that. I'm very impressed.
I'm just trying to entice the people to click.
Well, I appreciate that because it is good clickbait, and I want people to click and to listen to the podcast because it does matter, and we keep track. So Mike Parsons, our executive producer, doing a fine job indeed. Danielle Mason, always at the ready, running all the controls, but I will not be using Danielle as my program guide for special programming because she, I think, got very excited about the Mike Tyson fight, got me all excited last weekend to watch it, went through all of the hoops that Netflix makes you go through if you haven't used Netflix in a while, and the fight is not until July.
I was just setting you up for July.
No,
you're already.
You said this weekend, I can't wait. I know where I'll be Saturday. I'm going to be watching the fight. And I go, well, I got to watch the fight. And actually what I was trying to do was tape it. But believe me, the fight is in July. I didn't think there was enough. They need a lot more hype to build this up. And how are they making money if it's free on Netflix? I don't get it.
You know, we'll research it. We got time to do all that until July.
That could be why a lot of these streaming services are in so much financial trouble.
It might be. Yeah. Well, yeah.
You can watch Stranger Things from now until July then. I mean, you got a whole library of Netflix content to hold you over until July 20th.
I don't believe I've ever watched Stranger Things. Am I missing out on something?
Yes.
Okay.
Danielle will make you a list. That's actually on there, though.
I don't know. They might have taken it off. Who knows?
Well, make me a list, though, because I want to be on top of some of these things. And I haven't really religiously, maybe that upsets people, but I haven't religiously watched a program since Ted Lasso. I loved that show.
A lot of people did.
Apparently, my team did not.
No, it's because it's on Apple TV. That's something I've never subscribed to. There's got to be like two or three shows on one of these streaming services because I only like to subscribe to one at a time, or else you get all these bills that accumulate for stuff
yes.
that you're not using.
And then you have to hire Rocket Money or whatever that. I still haven't signed up for that.
Oh, I have it, and it's
saves you a lot of money.
No. Well.
It just lets you know all the money that's going out the window.
But it could save you money if you, in fact, used their services, but I don't want to pay for that. That's interesting because I have to pay for a service for them to get rid of a service sometimes or to find a better deal.
We had a couple of guys on the morning show years ago that would come in to your home or your business, whatever, and they claimed they could find all kinds of things that you were paying for that you didn't know, and they could eliminate that.
I mean, they do that on Rocket Money for free. They will find things that even know.
Well, because I know I'm paying on computers I don't even own anymore that are somewhere in the computer junk pile.
Oh, no.
I'm paying, the protection stuff or whatever it is. I know I'm doing that.
Once a year, I used to kind of go through all of my bills and see what I'm paying for, what I'm not paying for. But, then everything got so expensive, it doesn't matter anyway, because the stuff that you have to pay for has gone up, and you cut all the frivolous stuff, so there's nowhere to cut anymore.
Interesting. I'm sure I've got plenty of places to cut. So I might have to do that rocket thing. Is it expensive?
No, it's not. I just don't have the extra cash to be doing all that.
Okay. Well, I have to look into it because I think I'm losing a lot of extra cash because of the things I'm paying for that I don't use and have forgotten about. You know, that the bane of my existence is the auto pay.
Yes, I hate auto pay.
And the number of things that you can buy today that automatically go to auto pay, and I'm not even aware of it.
Everything is a subscription now, too. You can't just go buy something one time and have it. Everything's a monthly fee now.
I bought a vitamin, and I did it online because I couldn't get to any of the places, and now I get it every month.
And you're probably getting charged for that.
Yeah, of course.
I messed up once, and I got a free trial of these certain vitamins, and then I forgot to cancel it, and then they kept coming every week, and I was like, oh, my God. Now I have, like, 4 bottles of each of these vitamins.
Of course.
I finally canceled, but it's going to take me forever.
Go ahead, Paul, sorry.
I was just going to say, I know for a fact, go ahead, sue me, and I'm not talking about the vitamin companies, but some of these companies that get you locked into these things make it so difficult to cancel.
You know what it reminds me of? Remember, like, the 80s and the 90s, we would get that thing in the mail that says, buy 10 CDs for a penny or something.
Yes, and then they send you 10 every month, and they ain't a penny anymore.
You'd be on the phone hours. You know, there's so many kids at my school got in trouble for that because we all, oh, wow, what a deal. And then that's how they hook you.
And they know they get you, you know, they get you on the phone or online and then they just drag it out.
Yep.
Could you hold for just a moment, please?
No!
Right. And you're holding.
Right.
And then they come back and then somebody else comes on. Can I help you? Well, I was in the middle of canceling something. Oh, we'll be right with you.
Let me escalate this.
Yeah. Is that what they say? Let me escalate this?
Yeah, or, you know, let me send you up to my manager or whatever, and then you just do the runaround.
It's the 3-card Monty, only it's to cancel something. I want to say real quick, because I keep meaning to say this, if I don't write it down and put it in my stack of stuff, Jeff Marcereau is such a great guy. Another Monroe kid, but that's not why I say such a great guy. He's just a great guy. He's been at the radio station forever. He's in charge of all sales, and that's not been easy in broadcasting or media for the last 10 years, but he does a great job, and he just received the Hunger Free Michigan Award for all of the work he's done for the folks that are, you know, we do our Hunger Free in the D, and we get all the credit because we're on the air doing that with Tom Chalani, Dario Bergamo, Cars and Cigars, Hunger Free in the D, all these things that we all do. But he's in the background always making sure these things happen. Steve Finitieri is too. But they just gave an award, and it was to Jeff Marcereau, and I wanted to congratulate him on his Hunger Free Michigan Award. He's an all-around good guy.
He's also a vampire because he does not age.
He doesn't age, no. Nor does he sleep, and he is at the radio station all hours. How'd we run out of time already? Hey, USA Today has nominated the Ford Fireworks as one of America's best places to see fireworks. Now, we have to vote. Vote today. And I think the quickest thing I can tell you is go to theparade.org, and they'll have a link. Theparade.org. If one of you guys would try that out and then let me know. Color the Sky with Sunshine, the rooftop party presented by Ford Motor Company for the parade company's fireworks, Ford Fireworks. Has still a few places available. We'll broadcast from there and look forward to that. And do we have Ken Lingenfelter coming up? Do we? Yeah, because that's coming up this Saturday.
Yeah, he's coming on Friday.
Okay, the charity spring open house for the Lingenfelter Collection to benefit, once again, the American Cancer Society. It's coming up Saturday, April 20th, and Ken will be on the show and talk about it. At-will donations accepted at the door. 100% of the proceeds benefiting the American Cancer Society. Over 175 vehicles. It's one of the top-rated car collections in the world. No tickets necessary. Kids are welcome. It's a wonderful place. If you haven't seen it and you love cars, you are going to love what Ken Lingenfelter is putting together for charity. He'll be on Friday to talk about it. We're underway on this Tuesday, April 16th. Don't forget to stream us at WJR.com, the WJR app. The podcasts are there, too. It's all for you right here on WJR. I don't get it. Why did Ray say it's the Tuesdays are the worst, his least favorite day of the week? And I said that into my microphone, and then Danielle said it's her least favorite. Why is Tuesday your least favorite day of the week?
Because
I never even thought about it.
On Monday, right, you think Monday, oh, you hate Mondays. But no, you don't actually feel the effects of the Monday tired and the Monday blues until Tuesday.
Wow. Okay.
Ray right. knows what he's talking about because I feel it too. This is my tired day.
Okay. I think every day is a great day. I'm not a big fan of Mondays, but I would hate to think, forget about it. Today's a great day. If it's your birthday, happy birthday to you. You celebrate with regular listener contributor Keith Newell celebrating his birthday. And he tells me about Bern Schwartz's birthday, a retired IBMer and an award-recognized volunteer with the Sarah Fisher Center after decades of service. Good for Bern. Thanks for the heads up on that. And happy birthday to you as well, Keith Newell. It's a big birthday week. We mentioned a whole bunch of April or Aries birthdays earlier. Of course, yours truly's birthday is coming up this, I don't know, is it Thursday? Maybe Thursday, the 18th. And then Sophie, Friday the 19th. So it's a big birthday week. Again, if it's your birthday, happy birthday to you. Big week that will be remembered for a long time of things that happened. And I don't know how this happened, but we told everyone first yesterday. Somehow we got the word early, well before the 4:30 press conference, if it was 4:30, whenever they had a press conference. But we said that, in fact, General Motors is going to relocate their headquarters from the Renaissance Center to Hudson's Detroit. And, of course, that is true. It happened. We just happened to get it first. And we don't always try to give things first, but it just happened. But now a lot of people are questioning it. I heard the boys. I heard Tom and Kevin saying, oh, but what happens to the Renaissance Center? This is bad for the Renaissance Center. I don't think it is. But let's find out from a real expert who pays attention to these things, senior business editor and great columnist for the Detroit News, Daniel Howes. Good afternoon, Daniel.
Hey, how are you, Dub?
I'm good. I think, knowing Mary Barra and knowing Mr. Gilbert, Dan Gilbert, this isn't going to be bad for anybody. This is going to be a good thing.
Well, I think on first blush, you got to acknowledge that this is good probably for General Motors, and it's certainly good for Dan Gilbert, who needs a marquee corporate tenant in his new Hudson's Detroit. I think the jury is still out whether it's good for Detroit ultimately, and I say that only because, you know, all you need to do is pay attention to what's happened in this country in the past few years and recognize that corporate headquarters are not what they used to be. People are working more remotely. They've got hybrid work environments. GM has got people in 3 days a week, not five. Most of their engineering and marketing and stuff is decamped and is up in Warren. I think they're lucky that GM decided to stay in the city of Detroit. And for the reasons you articulate, I mean, Mary Barra, who's a native Metro Detroiter, and Mark Royce, who's a native Metro Detroiter, I think they are committed to that. But all you need to do is think about the fact that GM is taking two floors in that new building compared to what is in the Renaissance Center to know that this is quite a statement. And I don't think this is the end. I mean, I wouldn't be surprised if you saw Ford Motor Company do something, putting $2 billion into their PDC in Dearborn, putting $1 billion into the train station in Corktown. The glass house is getting old. I think it was built in the 50s, if I'm not mistaken. I mean, this town abhors change, Paul, as you know. It doesn't like it. It's mistrustful of it. And I think, but I think what's happening in the auto industry is a sign of things to come. And I think my advice to people is get used to it, because I think you're going to see more of this kind of stuff.
I think you're right. I got a note from Matt Cullen last night, and we're going to have Matt Cullen on. He was, as you certainly recall, you and I have been around a long time. He was the architect yep. of GM moving into the Renaissance Center. I think it was the right move then, and I think this move is the right move now for General Motors. And here's why I'm excited. The Renaissance Center hasn't worked for a long time. It was, from the very beginning, it was a challenging building to find your way around. I used to joke that I went into the Renaissance Center and came out 6 months later. The fact is, it was a difficult building to navigate. You take a guy like Dan Gilbert and his Bedrock team, the things they can do. Can you imagine beautiful condos overlooking the river in one of those pieces of those? What?
Yeah, no question. No question, Dub. I mean, I think that the possibilities are probably limitless. And, you know, as I said before, I mean, I think a lot of this comes down to the people. And that's what you keep talking about. You're talking about individual leaders, not companies, but individual. Dan Gilbert, Mary Barra, Matt Cullen,
Mark Royce.
Mike Duggan, Warren Evans, you know, Gretchen Whitmer. I mean, you need the right people with the right attitudes who can lead their organizations to a solution as opposed to, you know, worrying about their own piece of cheese. And in that sense, I'm optimistic. But I think we have to be realistic about what could or could not go in what we understand as the Rensen. There aren't corporate clients who are customers who are looking for 1 million square feet in a downtown area.
Right, but that's the point. You have the mind of Dan Gilbert, who takes real estate and makes magic. I think of an upgraded hotel, the condo possibility as part of it. Certainly office space, but manageable office space. Knowing Dan, he could even take part of one of the towers or part of the area that could be entrepreneur space or space for new mom and pop businesses needing to get a start. I mean, there's so many things that can be done creatively with that massive building. I don't think for a second he's going to make an announcement that GM has moved out and IBM has decided to take over the Renaissance Center. I don't think that at all.
No, but I think we also have to remember that somebody has to pay for all of this. And if you're taking office space and converting it into condos, you've got all sorts of, for example, plumbing work that you have to do for each unit, which you don't have in an office thing. So all that stuff has to be done, and somebody's got. And when you're talking about a massive structure like that, it's a bigger challenge. I'm not saying it's impossible, but it's a hell of a challenge.
It is indeed, and I knew you'd have the right to. A sense of balance in this whole thing. I got to ask you a question that I wasn't planning on asking you, but do you have a day of the week that you especially don't like? Our weather guy just said, on Tuesday, it's not my favorite day of the week. Well, I never thought about it that way.
Well, you know, Tuesdays are not one of my favorites, and that has to do with internal meetings and all sorts of things we deal with on Tuesdays, but it has nothing to do with Tuesday. It's just, I mean, it could be the same thing if we had those things scheduled on Wednesday or Thursday. I would probably. It's just that we're doing a lot of stuff and not kind of necessarily focusing on the journalism. But that's part of working in a newspaper in the 21st century.
Yep, you're right. Okay, always a pleasure, Daniel.
You bet, my friend.
Daniel Howe, senior business editor, columnist extraordinaire for the Detroit News. So there, Danielle, I had no idea. My eyes are being opened.
I want you to know that the salespeople here come in on Tuesday as well, and they have meetings all day. So this is probably their most hated day.
Is that right?
That is right.
I didn't know. I had no idea. I have to pay closer attention. I mean, Mondays, I understand. Mondays are tough, but you just explained it brilliantly that you don't feel the blues of the Monday and the stress of a Monday till Tuesday. Had never looked at it that way. All right. We're going to continue a conversation we began, and now it's a good thing with what's happening, the bridges being blocked. They even happened close to home here. Osama Ciblani, the publisher of the Arab American News, is going to continue the conversation we started and what's going on in this great country of ours that we have people running around saying death to America. We're going to have more time to talk about that up next here in Focus on WJR. Detroit police quickly moved into position, stopping a convoy of pro-Palestinian supporters who were headed to the Ambassador Bridge in their vehicles yesterday in what probably was going to be an attempt to shut down traffic at the bridge to Canada, as we saw happening in San Francisco and in New York City. We were in a conversation Friday with Osama Sablani, the publisher of the Arab American News, all-around good guy, proud to be an American. He chooses to be an American and to live in America and believes he has lived the American dream. And many people in his community, he said, feel the same way. And so I've been asking him to try to help me understand, because I'm not going to pretend that I have no idea how somebody gets to a point where they are screaming, death to America. I really don't. Having been born and raised in America with an ethnic background, Lebanese, I am so thankful that I'm in America, and I'm missing something that I think Osama Sablani can help us with. And that's why I've asked him back. I promised I wanted him back to have more time, and here it is. Osama, always a pleasure, sir.
Good afternoon, Paul. Thank you very much for inviting me again.
Well, I like hearing from you, and I believe you have wise information. One of the things that we talked about, of course, was it's hard for me to imagine that people, the Palestinians, don't blame Hamas for bringing this hellfire onto the Palestinian people, because certainly they knew this was going to happen. And you point out, this is not a problem that started on October 7th. Correct. You said it started in 1948. Start there.
Correct. Well, it started in 1948 when the Palestinians were evicted out of their homes and their land. There were probably about, like, at that time, 750,000 that they went into neighboring states, and now there are millions still in refugee camps living life that you and I cannot live for 1 hour. They have been living there. Their children, their grandchildren, their great-grandchildren have been living for 75 years in refugee camps with no identity, no places. They cannot buy anything, cannot work. They have no work permit in the neighboring countries. And that is an awful thing to do to a human being. So October 7 is a point in an action, but it's not the beginning of a war. The beginning of the war and the beginning of action started back in 1948. And the problem, and the biggest problem, Paul, that we have is that we have lack of leadership in the world, because this issue should have been addressed. Bill Clinton tried to address it in 1993. I was in the White House on September 13, 1993. In fact, I was sitting right behind Secretary Schultz when the Oslo Accord was signed between Yasser Arafat, the PLO chair, and Isaac Rabin, the Prime Minister of Israel. And at that time, we thought that here we go. Now we are starting a road to peace and to two-state solutions. But what later happened is that nothing. It did not materialize. Isaac Rabin was assassinated by the Israelis. And Yasser Arafat was killed later in the beginning of 2002, I think 2003. So now we are, after 30 years of the signing of the Oslo Accord, we still have the same problem. In fact, the problem has been pushed to a limit where it's beyond even repair anymore. And there is no leadership in America. America is leading the world today. And I blame the leadership of George W. Bush, of Barack Obama, of Donald Trump, and now of Joe Biden, because they are not doing anything in order to fix the damage and repair the situation. Palestinians should have their homeland. Two-state solution was the answer. The one who did not do it, who refused to do it, are the Israelis, not the Palestinians. Palestinians have accepted the two-state solution. They took 20% of their original land, but the Israelis refused. And the fact of the matter is, today, as we speak, the President of the United States is saying, let's have a two-state solution, and Benjamin Netanyahu is saying, no way, we are not going to accept. And the majority of his cabinet does not want to have a Palestinian state to coexist with an Israeli state. So what do you do with the 6 million, 7 million Palestinians who are in the West Bank, in Gaza, and in Jerusalem, and also inside Israel? What are you going to do with them? Are we going to kill all of them? I mean, is this his plan? To evict them where? To Sinai? Or to the Negev desert? Where is he going to put 6 million Palestinians? This is the question that needs to be answered. And it has to be answered by the Israelis and by the American administration that is supporting Israel and continue to finance its wars and continue to protect Israel politically, financially, and militarily.
We always hear that the Palestinians, the Arabs, are raised to hate and want to do away with all Israelis. But kind of what you're saying is if Netanyahu can't come up with a two-state solution, won't accept it, it's almost as if the Israelis are saying, we don't want any of the Palestinians. We hate them. We don't want them to exist.
That is really what's happening right now, Paul. I mean, this is not a propaganda. This is something that Netanyahu is saying to the president of the United States. No, I do not want a two-state solution. I will not accept a Palestinian state to exist next to Israel. So this is where the problem is. Now we have to address it, and we have to have a leadership in order to stand up and say, look, we need to finish this war and this conflict and put it to rest so people can live in peace and prosperity in the Middle East. The Israelis and the Palestinians and the rest of the Arab world can do a lot together. But we need to resolve this issue.
We do. And Osama, it's not just for those people in that part of the world to live in peace. It's for the world to live in peace, because the entire world is affected by all of this.
Absolutely.
And I, for one, am really tired of it and need somebody to step in, because it doesn't look like it's going to be the Palestinians or the Israelis are going to step in and say, all right, let's fix this and let's figure out a way we can live together. So it is going to take Great
Only
Britain,
America.
The United States.
Only America can do this. Only America and the leadership in America that they can do it. And unless they step in and they be a peaceful broker, an honest broker for peace, this issue will not be resolved.
Osama Ciblani, I appreciate your straightforwardness and telling it like you see it, and we really appreciate it.
One more thing, Paul.
Sure.
No one in our community will tolerate death to America. The guy who shouted death to America is not an Arab. He's not an Arab American or a Muslim American. He's a convert. He's a white American. He said it and he explained himself. We condemned it in all terms. America is a great country. It's our country. We love our country. We disagree with its foreign policy, but that doesn't mean that we can accept this term, death to America. No, long live America.
And over the last few days, we've heard it around the country, sadly. Right. And that we need to get fixed. Osama Ciblani, God bless you, publisher of the Arab American News. We'll talk again soon.
Thank you, Paul.
Thank you, sir. As we continue, Focus with Paul W. Smith, WJR. Oh, my best friend growing up, Paul Merman, also of Monroe, celebrating his birthday on April 16th. It's a big birthday week and big birthday month. And it's a beautiful day this Tuesday, April 16th. Sunshine and just a great day to get out if you can and play a little golf. Why not? Speaking of golf, Crime Stoppers of Michigan has their 7th annual charity golf outing. And you can join them for a fun day that supports Crime Stoppers of Michigan and their mission. Here to talk a little bit about that mission and a little bit about that golf opportunity at Boulder Point Golf Club in Oxford is Dan DiBardino, the president of Crime Stoppers. Hi, Dan.
Hi, Paul. How are you today, sir?
I am excellent, thank you. And I hope things are well at Crime Stoppers. When did Crime Stoppers start?
We are in our 30th year as of right now, Paul. We started through the Detroit Chamber 30 years ago, and we're still working with the citizens of Southeast Michigan today.
I remember when you started, and people call 1-800-SPEAK-UP. It's anonymous, and there are cash rewards. Has anyone kept track of how much money you've doled out in those 30 years?
Yeah, as a matter of fact, Paul, I can tell you that over the last 6 years, dealing with about 42,000 anonymous calls throughout Southeast Michigan, we authorized over $50,000 $60,000 worth of rewards. But you know the good thing, Paul, if I can add one thing to that?
Sure.
Only 30% of the tipsters who are awarded tips actually pick them up, which tells us that 70% of the people that call just want to do the right thing, and that's a great thing to hear.
Oh, that is a wonderful thing to hear. I'm thrilled. I wouldn't have guessed that. That 70% of the tipsters aren't doing it for the money. They're doing it because it is the right thing. If you see something, say something, do something, and if the do something is to call Crime Stoppers at 1-800-SPEAK-UP, you're doing the right thing.
Well, we're delighted with that, Paul, and it keeps us going. Also, if you would, very quickly, before we talk about the golf outing, I just want to let your listeners know our second deliverable at Crime Stoppers is we have a center for crime prevention, which is in our website or on our website, which provides people with a lot of information to stay safe. And I was told the other day we have about 1,500 people right now a week that are going into that center to read and study and look at things to talk about safety. So I encourage your listeners to do that as well.
What is the web page they go to get all this information?
It's 1-800-SPEAK-UP.org. 1-800-SPEAK-UP.org. And they'll find the center right in our website.
The Center for Crime Prevention, 1-800-SPEAK-UP.org. That's a good one. That's clever. 1-800-SPEAK-UP.org. And you'll find the information that you need for this wonderful 7th Annual Charity Golf Outing, Monday, June 3rd. It's a great event that is chaired by Anthony Wickersham, the Macomb County Sheriff. It is $200 per player, which includes 18 holes of golf with a cart, a bucket of range balls, continental breakfast, Bloody Mary bar, lunch at the Turn, one drink ticket, and a buffet dinner. Man, you're getting a lot for $200.
You really are. It's a great value, Paul. We have about 160, 170 golfers, a lot of law enforcement people, a lot of business people. It's a great day just to relax, enjoy the sunshine, and have a great day. So I would encourage any of your listeners that want to join us, jump onto our website, sign up. If you want to sponsor, we're looking for sponsors. It's a wonderful day on June the 3rd, and we look forward to seeing all your listeners out there with us.
For registration, sponsorship opportunities, event information, you can contact Shirley Schuler at 313-922-5000, extension 114, or Shirley at MichiganAlliance.org. But maybe it'd be best and easier to start at 1-800-SPEAK-UP.org, 1-800-SPEAK-UP.org. It's coming up June 3rd, a Monday here this year, and a great event for fun and supporting Crime Stoppers of Michigan and its mission. And I thank you, Dan DiBardino, for all that you've continued to do for Crime Stoppers as president. Thank you, sir.
Thank you very much, Paul. We always appreciate you sponsoring us. Thank you.
Well, it is my pleasure to help out any way I can, and I know my listeners will do the same thing. Have any jurors been picked yet? I know none were picked on the first day of President Trump's Manhattan criminal trial. We'll see what's going on with that today. We'll get some updates. And Michigan House special elections. There's a lot going on. Stay with us. And we're so glad you come to talk and to listen here at WJR. And whether you do it on the 760 on the AM dial, it's the way a lot of us grew up doing it. Now the new way is streaming. And it's really spectacular and it's easy. Stream us at WJR.com or the WJR app. And that's where you can get our podcasts as well. That means if you can't be here every day, noon to 2, I understand that. But you can hear the show at any time. Any time you'd like to, we'll be there for you. And if you do the podcasting, you can do individual interviews or the whole show, which is what I hope you'll choose and listen in. We've got the team here on a beautiful Tuesday, even though it's not some people's favorite day, I have learned, notably Danielle Mason's. Mike Parson has not clarified or declared a better or worse day for Tuesday.
Yeah, I don't know. I wish I had a differing opinion, but I am more tired on Tuesday than any other day of the week because Monday I'm all refreshed from the weekend. And then Tuesday comes around, I said, oh, my God, I thought it was Wednesday. And then Wednesday comes around, and you're almost done with the week. So I guess if I had to pick a least favorite, it would be Tuesday.
Wow, I just never thought of it this way. And then I just out of the blue asked Daniel House, and he doesn't like Tuesday either, mostly because of certain meetings and things that take place on Tuesday for him. But he wasn't a big fan of Tuesdays very specifically. You're not a fan of Tuesday. Danielle's not a fan of Tuesday. I guess there's a lot of people.
Yeah, I feel like Monday you're easing into the week. Friday you're easing out of the week. And then you're just going full stop Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday. So kind of that would make Tuesday more like Monday than Monday actually is.
Yeah, well, I've always thought of Monday like, you know, Monday. But that was kind of the mindset a lot of people have. Oh, Monday. Oh, boy.
I like Tuesday better than Sunday night. Sunday night after 5 or 6, I actually is probably my least favorite time of the week.
Well, part of that is you go on the radio at 5 in the morning.
That's true.
That is, you know, I used to go on at 5:30, and then I went on at 6. It's still, it's dark 30. It's like, I hate to use these terms, but I will. It's kind of ungodly. The world is on a different schedule than those of you who are work at 5.
Yeah, no matter how much you like what you're doing, that is a challenge. And you do make a good point. Do you get the Sunday scaries anymore now that you have to be up not as early? Because I used to not until I had to get up this early. Then I started getting the Sunday scaries again a little bit.
What do you mean the Sunday scaries? Like you're afraid you're going to oversleep?
Well, not Sunday scaries, but just kind of like that feeling on Sunday where you're like, Sunday in the football season, it's usually when football's over, the 4 o'clock games are over. It's like it's 6 or 7 o'clock on a Sunday, and you're like, the weekend's over.
Well, I don't know. You brought something up that I hadn't thought about in a while. That I miss when football season is over. But whatever happened to that other football league we were supposed to be watching? Did that start yet or no?
Yeah, it's still around. The Michigan Panthers are off to a pretty good start. They got a field goal kicker who keeps breaking records for like 60-yard field goals. And
I did see a piece on that. Somebody kicking yet another really far field goal. I guess the season's underway.
Yeah, I've got the 2023 standings, but I think the Michigan Panthers they're at least 2-1 this year.
I think so. They started out well, from what I recall.
Yeah.
Speaking of Sunday nights and starting at 5 in the morning or whenever it might be, story from the Associated Press talking about getting enough sleep for everybody. A majority of Americans say they would feel better if they could have more sleep. We are all, and this has been a long time now, we're all sleep deprived. We're sleep deprived. I know, I remember, and I guess you start to think of these things because Sophie's 21st birthday is this Friday, when I told friends and family that we were expecting, we were going to have a baby, they said, oh boy, are you going to be tired? And I said, I do a morning show. I'm already tired.
You'll be up anyway.
Well, here's the thing. I'll never forget this moment. I remember Sophie would be crying, and I tried everything but throwing her in the car and driving around the block or putting her on a washing machine. You know, I heard all these ways to stop a baby from crying. Not in the washing machine, on top of the washing machine.
That's an important distinction.
Yeah, I wanted to make sure. Paul W. Smith said he put his daughter in a washing machine. No, I didn't. I didn't even put her on top of a washing machine. I'd walk her around talking to her, and she would just scream. And I'll never forget the nights, it wasn't just one, where I finally got her quiet. I put her very gently in her bed, which was right next to our bedroom.
You said, regards, go back to sleep.
No, I went to go and get in bed very quietly, and the alarm went off to get up to go to work. That happened a number of times. So those people who told me I'd be even more tired were absolutely right. But all of America has been sleep deprived for a long time, and I'm not exactly sure why. We do control, generally speaking, the time we go to bed.
There's a couple of theories out there. Number one, the blue light from your phone. People scroll and look through their phones a lot. I guess that mimics like sunlight, and that kind of tells your body not to go to sleep. The other thing, it's something called revenge bedtime, where you feel like you don't have enough personal time to your space throughout the day. So you try to get some of that back late at night when you've got no restrictions on you.
Interesting.
Yeah. And so people stay up later trying to catch up on shows or doing things they wish they could have gotten to during the day.
I have always stayed up too late and gotten up too early until this shift. But my body has not. I thought this would be a piece of cake, but my body has not adjusted. Now, look, 55 years I was doing going to bed too late, getting up too early. So these few months, I don't even remember when I started this. My body isn't ready yet for this.
Wow. Yeah, because you'd think it'd just feel like summer vacation. All right, 55 years of getting up early. Okay, now we get up whenever you want. And you probably still get up at like 5, 6 o'clock.
Well, I wake up several times, unfortunately. I just wake up several times. But I am telling you, it is a pleasure to wake up at 4 o'clock and realize you don't have to start getting ready to go to work.
Yes.
That is a pleasure.
It's one of the best feelings in the world, realizing you've still got a couple hours before you have to get up.
Yep, I did it for a very long time. Okay, so what's going on with Tesla? People are really criticizing Musk and saying that sales are down because of his personality. Could that be possible? Tesla just laid off 14,000 workers.
I mean, it can be possible, because I feel like everyone's boycotting something nowadays. So, you know, if you come out with a strong political opinion, half the country is going to dig in and say, all right, I'm going to support you just because. And the other half says, I'm never doing business with that guy again.
Well, it's bizarre, that's for sure. We saw the story. I haven't heard anything more about it. I told you that I ran into the former mayor, Kwame Kilpatrick, a few months ago on the streets of Grosse Pointe. And it was like, I kind of was looking down. I looked up, and there was this mountain of a man, Kwame Kilpatrick. And he goes, hey, Paul. And I go, Mr. Mayor. And we had a conversation, and I'm struggling with the idea of trying to ask him to come on the show and talk. But I'm not sure that makes a lot of sense. He still believes he did nothing wrong, which is a very bad position for him to be in at this point, at least from our standpoint. But now federal prosecutors have discovered some money during a hunt for money belonging to the former mayor that they want applied toward the more than $820,000 he owes taxpayers as part of his public corruption conviction. I don't know I don't think we want to get in the middle of that, do we? I don't think so.
Yeah, let's think it over.
Yeah, let's just let it ride for a little while. It's all still out there, though, and it's still raw for a lot of people. Have they picked any jurors yet? Do we know? Because yesterday they couldn't pick any jurors.
No, I think they've got like 42 questions they have to answer on their survey. So
it was really, and I think, looked like a lot of work to become a member on that jury. They want you to work hard before you can get on the jury so you can write a book.
And I think, right, exactly. And I think I saw there's 6,000 prospective jurors, and they got through 250 yesterday. So it could be a while.
Hey, when are we having the story on with Rich Homburg? Rich called me in the middle of a meeting yesterday. Rich Homburg called me to tell me the news that Detroit Public TV is not just changing their name, but changing their location, coming right back into the heart of the city. Do we have him booked yet?
He's on tomorrow, I want to say 12:30. We have a little break between guests at the Detroit Economic Club. So he's on at 12:30 tomorrow.
All right, what I do with my... Yeah, okay, that's good, because I have all the stuff I need for that. We got a couple of other things that we have planned. Just got a message that Michigan football... let's see. All right, so tomorrow it's Jim Fitterling. I love Jim Fitterling at the soundboard at the Motor City Casino. Jim Fitterling, the head of Dow, and he's done so many great things for everybody. But where's this Michigan football thing? Takes forever here. Michigan football handed 3-year probation recruiting penalties, and fine by the NCAA. Oh, boy, that's a nice gift to the new head coach, Sherrone Moore. Welcome, coach. Oh, by the way, we've got some violations. It's all from that COVID-19 dead period and the staff members participating in impermissible roles. Of course, under former coach Jim Harbaugh, he got out when the getting was good. So we'll check all that out for you coming up here on WJR. Ba-da-doo-doo-doo-doo. Sunny, beautiful day. You streaming us? WJR.com, the WJR app. Listen to the shows, all of them, anytime you want, because the podcasts are now there, too. The podcasts can be found at WJR.com and the WJR app. We're underway. Somebody said earlier when we were talking, I might have been Daniel House, it's always people that are there behind good stories, like Mark Royce, who we're going to speak with, I think, tomorrow. Tomorrow? Yeah, maybe tomorrow.
Thursday. We're still nailing down the details.
Okay. Mary Barra, Dan Gilbert, Mayor Mike Duggan, Wayne County Executive Warren Evans. I shouldn't have started to try to name people, but all the people we saw talking about the switch from GM moving their world headquarters to the Hudson's Detroit building, newly named, from the Rensen. And now a lot of people are worried about the Rensen. I think the Rensen's going to be fine. I don't know. I think the Rensen's been in trouble. And any kind of a change in getting Dan Gilbert involved, I think, is a good thing. But anyway, we talked about the people. Well, there's another person, a name that comes up around so many good things that happen in our area. Matt Friedman. He's the co-founder of Tanner Friedman Strategic Communications. And he is here to talk about something that a bunch of major news organizations have done that we touched on so briefly that we didn't really get into, but all the major news organizations have sent letters to President Biden and President Trump urging them to commit to debating. Let's check in with Matt Friedman, who can tell us more about that. Matt, always a pleasure. Always nice to have you involved in anything.
Thank you, Paul. I feel the same way about you, and it's great to talk to you well after sunrise for a change.
It feels better to talk well after sunrise, and I'm glad we have some sun. But, you know, the only person who I think would resist this kind of a debate would be President Biden, saying, what does he have to gain? And I think that President Trump has said several times he does want to debate. He said he does.
Yeah, he said he does. And this is something we're seeing at all levels of politics, and we're seeing it in business too. It's a trend. Maybe you've noticed it. Maybe your teammates have noticed it trying to book guests. It's something I see working with clients in the PR business, is that the protective instinct over leaders that advisors have had in politics is now spread into business. And there's more fear about saying the wrong thing than there's ever been, because of what can happen if you say the wrong thing. It shows up in sound bites and commercials and on social media and on and on and on. It lives forever. And so I think that fear of saying the wrong thing is probably guiding this, not only at the presidential level, but from what I'm hearing, even at the state level, when it comes to having debates. And anytime you see news organizations that are highly competitive, no matter how broad you paint the media with a brush, these are very competitive for-profit organizations working together and saying, we'll run debates. They're not going to have commercials. We think it's in the public interest. I think that's something that the political parties have to take very seriously. It's unusual.
Well, it's let's face it, it is a general election debates, as has been stated a million times, have a rich tradition in our American democracy. They played a vital role in every presidential election for the past 50 years.
And they're very highly rated, too, Paul. They're about as close as it gets to Super Bowl and NFL playoff ratings in today's TV environment. We've seen that from 2020 and 2016.
Well, that's interesting to point out. I'm glad that you have Matt Friedman, and that's doing what you do in public relations and such. You're on top of that, because we keep saying we want an involved and informed electorate. And this is about the closest we can get if we can get that kind of reaction. I'd like to see that kind of reaction at the polls when people don't show up to vote. But if they show up to watch the debate, maybe that will get them to do the right thing, which is exercise their franchise. It's it is an interesting issue. And I don't know, have we ever had to have the media gang up together to try to cajole these guys into debating?
Not that I know of. I know that the Commission for Presidential Debates was set up in 1988, and they had several election cycles where they were running the presidential debates. There were three of them for president, usually one or two for vice president. They'd try to have geographic diversity in places like college campus to get good audiences. They would come up with different formats so that they weren't all the same. And that seemed to work until that system was squashed, we thought, by the Ronna Romney McDaniel-led GOP a couple of years ago, and now this is all in limbo. And yes, it is in the public interest. Anytime you can get candidates for anything talking with limited filters, that does sound like a good idea for the public, even though the skill of debating and the skill of zingers and sick burns or whatever you want to call them is not necessarily relevant to being president or holding any office or being in any sort of leadership position. So take the entertainment factor out of it. There is a public interest factor and actual public interest, as we talked about.
Matt, explain sick burns to me. What do you mean by that?
That's what happens on social media when somebody comes up with a zinger in a debate and say, oh, he really burned the other guy.
Oh, I see. Really burning. I get the burning. He really burned him or her. She really burned him.
Yeah, forgive the vernacular. But that's often the public reaction in the moment to these debates. But if you look at the bigger picture, there's a good reason to do it, even in this environment of fear and trepidation of somebody saying the wrong thing.
You know, it occurs to me, and you mentioned now that this is happening more than ever before. Matt Friedman, co-founder, Tanner Friedman, Strategic Communications, all-around good guy, very much involved in so many positive things in our community. You mentioned that there are those consultants, I'll use the word consultants. There are those people who are telling other people what they should or should not do. Might I point out that many times those consultants are wrong? First of all, they're consulting people who have higher positions than those consultants have gotten to, if you understand what I'm saying. They're not the president. They're not the president of a company. The first thing that came to my mind when you said that about people telling you, oh, you shouldn't do this. This will look bad. Don't do that. And I can't remember the specifics because my mind is almost, well, not nearly as bad as Joe Biden's. But when Bill Ford, when there was a plant explosion or fire at Ford Motor Company, Bill Ford's natural sense was to go there. And he was told.
At the Rouge. Yep.
The Rouge. Okay. And he was told, oh, no, no, you do not want to go there. You don't want your picture taken there. You don't want to be associated with that. They were wrong. He went, and it was the smartest and best thing he ever could have done, and that came from his heart, which is the way these people should react and not be paying a bunch of people to tell them what they should or shouldn't do. Boy, I'm glad I got that off my chest.
I don't mind being paid to help somebody figure out what to do, but the advice is follow your values.
Good for you. That's the right advice. You can always add to it and say, well, there's this that could happen, or it could go this way. This is what might be done. This is what might not be done. Whatever. Certainly you can help them understand the whole picture. But that's the best advice I've ever heard, Matt, from a guy giving advice, and that is follow your values. Follow your heart. Good for you. We got to go because we have to follow our clock.
Understood. Thanks, Paul.
Thank you, Matt. We'll see you around. Matt Friedman, co-founder, Tanner Friedman Strategic Communications. At 128 on WJR. Well, the chaos continues on various bridges and various places. I salute our Chief White and our Detroit Police Department. They broke up an opportunity for a blocking of our bridge, and that's a good thing. There's a lot of stuff going on out there that we need to fix. We see most of us had no idea how many people are willing in this country to stand up and say death to America. That's just unacceptable, and we can't just say we hate it, we don't like it, we think we should stop it. We have to figure out why. it's happening. How wrong are these people? What has misguided them? Is it education? Is it what's happened on colleges that we've complained about, but we haven't done anything about for a very long time? I don't have an answer. But we're going to try to help find an answer, and we're going to talk about it one way or another and get through all of this one way or another. We have a legend who has passed away that a lot of us have worked with or at least interviewed over the years, many years. And the work of forensic pathologist Dr. Werner Spitz was known truly around the world. He was the longtime chief medical examiner for Wayne County. He was a pioneer and really sought-after consultant in the world of forensics long before the science became part of popular culture. WJR senior news analyst Marie Osborne says the 97-year-old doctor made the Detroit area his home, and he was a superstar, Marie.
He sure was, Paul W. Dr. Werner Spitz's list of cases which he consulted on was long. We're talking about the assassination of John F. Kennedy, the O.J. Simpson case, Casey Anthony, JonBenet Ramsey, and the Phil Spector case. Those are just a few of the many, many cases on that long list. But his son, Dr. Daniel Spitz, said his father's legacy also includes the thousands of autopsies his father performed over the years. And when he served as the chief medical examiner for both Wayne and Macomb counties, Daniel Spitz says his father helped bring comfort and clarity to families who had questions about their loved one's death. And those cases, he says, were always important to his father. Dr. Spitz testified at hundreds of trials as an expert on causes of death, thanks to his deep understanding of forensics. He had a way of also helping juries to understand what that evidence was. He had an office in St. Clair Shores, and he continued doing private consultation work up until just a few weeks ago. Macomb County Executive Mark Hackle says his friendship with Spitz goes back more than 40 years. He was a dispatcher when he took a call involving the murder of a woman and her children. It was then that he interacted with Dr. Spitz and really learned about the work that he did, often providing key evidence in cases so that law enforcement could piece together a case. And Paul, yesterday on social media, Scott Lewis, I know you remember Scott, he was a longtime investigative reporter here in Metro Detroit. Scott Lewis posted this little story about he and Werner Spitz that early in his career, you know, he was doing a lot of investigative work, looking at a lot of murders, and he didn't really know what happened in an autopsy. He asked Dr. Spitz, could I come and watch one? And he said, sure. And so he says during the autopsy, Werner Spitz says to him, son, because he was standing about 6 feet away from him, he says, son, you can't see anything over there. Come on over here. You need to look at this.
Ugh.
And he said he was very good at showing him what he needed to see and how he came to his conclusions. And then he said, when we were done, he said, okay, now let's go out to dinner.
Well, that's better than I thought. I was afraid you were going to say he ate a sandwich while he was doing his.
Oh no!
But I would think it was in a movie, but probably not in real life. Yeah. But yeah, you know what I found about Dr. Spitz was he was so gentle in his explanation, and all the number of times, and it's been a long while, but all the number of times that I used to interview him, he never made me feel stupid, and I was stupid. I didn't understand a lot of this stuff, but he explained it in a gentle, nice way, understanding that I don't do autopsies. I'm not a doctor. I don't know. He never took that haughty attitude that he certainly could have had because he was world-renowned at what he did.
Well, that's the crux of what made him so good with juries, Paul. I saw him in the action in the courtroom and many times, and he could explain in very easy-to-understand layman terms, if you will, what something was and why he reached the conclusion that he did. And that's key to helping solve cases, to bring justice often in these cases. I don't know if you remember, too, recently he was part of a special involving the JonBenet Ramsey case. I mean,
documentary. Yeah,
I say recently. It wasn't, you know, like within the last 5 years or
2016. Yeah. Everything to me was the other day. Just
yeah,
so you know,
I know.
You
me
know,
too.
Just the other day.
Yeah, I know,
Paul. That was 30 years.
Yeah,
ago.
Yeah, it was 30 years ago. I totally get it. It's like back in 1970, and here we are.
Yep.
But he, in that case, he concluded that her brother had committed that murder, and of course, you know, a lot of people took, you know, deep exception to him saying that, but he says that's where the evidence led him.
Wow. I didn't even remember that.
Yeah.
This is where we need Kim and her mother, Earlene. They follow these stories. Mm-hmm. I mean, like you can't believe. Well, I guess a lot of Americans follow these kinds of stories. Otherwise, they wouldn't get the like the O.J. Simpson thing. Oh, yeah, yeah. I mean, when that first happened, I wanted to ignore it, but I realized it was a speeding train that you either jumped on board or you got run over by it. Oh. That was happening just as I was coming back home to Detroit. And it was big in Philly. It was big all around the country, obviously. But this is a great guy, and he chose Detroit as his home. He stayed here. Dr. Werner Spitz. And now is his son doing the same thing, Daniel Spitz?
He was the coroner for Macomb County. I don't know if he's still in that line of work or not.
Well, we send our condolences
Absolutely.
To the entire Spitz family, and I appreciate you doing this wonderful commemoration of him. Thank you, Marie.
Thank you.
Marie Osborne, WJR senior news analyst, in the loss of the world-renowned forensic pathologist, Dr. Werner Spitz, who has died at the age of 97. We continue on WJR. Well, the pretty fast couple of hours we've just gone through here in Focus, and we appreciate it. There's still so much more to talk about. I suspect that many of these things have been talked about or will be continued to be talked about with the Chris Renwick coming up next to find out what's going on with the presidents day two as they burn through billions and billions of potential folks to be there in the jury for his trial. That shouldn't be happening. There's some strange stories that are interesting, and wonder what the heck it means when you hear that the federal authorities have launched a criminal investigation into last month's ship crash that had destroyed Baltimore's Francis Scott Key Bridge. Now they're killed six people. They're looking into what was going on, what people on the ship knew, and when they knew it, one of those sorts of things. Hannah Gutierrez Reed, the armorer for the film Rust, I think got off pretty easy not doing her job and being high when she was supposed to be doing it, from what I understand. She was sentenced to just 18 months in prison. Somebody died from her inability to do her job correctly. And, of course, it's led to now Alec Baldwin, who got into so much trouble because he talked. He should have shut up, because there's no way in the world he should be held responsible for somebody else's job and what they didn't do correctly that put him in the situation to be holding a gun that had a loaded bullet in it, which never, ever would have crossed anyone's mind on a set for a movie. Anyway, we talked earlier, Tesla cutting 14,000 employees. Olympic torch lit in Greece ahead of the Paris 2024 Games. They lit it in Olympia, the birthplace of the ancient Olympics. And what else? Oh, Beyonce. All these people who have concerts. We saw it with Taylor Swift. Now we're seeing it with Beyonce. Beyonce is sending Levi's and Western boot sales soaring. Country fashion having a moment, thanks to the fanfare surrounding Beyonce's new album, Act Two, Cowboy Carter. I got to ask you, Danielle, why did you say it was one of the worst albums ever?
Me? Let me tell you. Because it doesn't make any sense.
Meaning, you don't think she should have done a country western album?
Absolutely not. It doesn't add up. So the only thing in the album that is slightly country are words and then certain sounds. The rest of it, her cadence, it's all still hip-hop. Everything else is still very much hip-hop influenced.
All the country royalty, though, have signed off on it. Dolly Parton says she likes it.
Dolly's on the album, from what I understand.
Dolly is on the album. She doesn't sing. She just says words. So does Willie Nelson. He just says words. All these people are just doing it because they are country royalty and they want to work with Beyonce. Not because any of the songs are good, but because they want to work with Beyonce. That is it.
Is it doing well on the charts, and is it selling?
It's not doing well. It's selling because people are listening to it. It's crazy how many people have bashed this album because it is not good.
But it's also crazy how many people are on the album and have listened to the album, though.
Right.
It doesn't make sense, but it's terrible. If that, I mean, it's going to be nominated for awards because this is the biggest, what basically talked about album of the year. It's going to be nominated. I will be so mad if it wins.
I had no idea you felt so strongly about this.
And I love Beyonce. Like, I'm a Beyonce fan, but this is not good. This is not good.
All right. I'm afraid to ask Chris Renwick. I have not partied in this conversation because I don't know. But to Chris Renwick, a Renaissance man that he is, or that you are, what do you think of this?
Well, I heard one song. And that was enough for me.
Meaning you didn't care for it?
No. Well, first of all, I don't like country music in the first place.
Oh,
so even if this was
a great country album. And you call yourself an American?
It's not. Well, first of all, a new country these days is very poppy. It's not.
Well, see, that's my question, Chris. I mean, isn't it just as country as all the other country that's out?
Yeah, it's not my thing. So I don't really partake anyway. But if this were to be a great country album, it's still not my
because you're not a country music fan.
It's not my thing. Yeah.
It's not your thing. Here's the thing you got to know about country music, and it's probably still true today as it was 30, 40 years ago. And that is, let's say you're having a bad day.
Mm-hmm.
Something horrible has happened in your life, maybe specifically your love life, and you think nobody could ever understand what I'm going through.
Oh, my God.
It's unbelievable. And then you get in the car and you turn the car on and you zip the radio around and you land on a song that's singing exactly about what you're going through. That, my friend, is a country song.
You're 100% correct. Absolutely 100%. A million correct. And it's really interesting to think about. The majority of country artists are men, and the men are the ones that are singing about the heartbreak. It puts them in the most vulnerable state ever, and it's beautiful.
That's how I felt the first time I heard Achy Breaky Heart.
Okay, the team is dismissed. I've got to do a handoff here for JR Afternoon with the one and only Chris Renwick, and we're never going to get there with this line of conversation. It's a busy week already, and it's only Tuesday, which I've now learned is, for some people, their least favorite day of the week. Do you have a least favorite day of the week, Chris?
Well, it's got to be Monday.
I would have thought Monday. I grew up thinking, oh, Monday. But then they've explained that you don't really get the blues and the hangover of the Monday till Tuesday. So many people on our staff and others I've asked don't like Tuesday. So they got to be thrilled because we're moving on to Wednesday.
I get it. Monday, you're still basking in the glow of the weekend, but yeah, Mondays are rough, I would say. So I'm gonna stick with Monday.
Stick with your Monday. Yeah. Be strong.
That's
good
right.
For you.
That's
you're a talk show host.
That's my feeling.
Yeah.
Mondays
stink. You
have
an opinion. 800-859-0.
No. Yeah. Yeah. Mondays.
Well, so I kept saying, have they picked any jurors yet? They haven't. I don't even know if they've started yet. They were starting late today for the president's.
I thought yesterday they swore some jurors in.
I don't think so.
Okay, that's what I thought I had read, and it was during my show. So we'll keep an eye on it. It's one of the things that we're going to talk about
today. Yeah, let them know what's going on. They went through 96 New Yorkers brought in yesterday. 50 were immediately dismissed.
Yeah.
You know, they were honest, and that's good. They either
sure.
couldn't be fair, is what they were saying. Okay, here's who's fair. Chris Renwick's fair. He's coming up next on JR Afternoon. I want you to continue doing what you're doing, making each and every day count, because truly each day is a gift. We'll look forward to being with you tomorrow from the Detroit Economic Club. Well worth listening in. Regards, Paul W. Smith.